Welcome to Story Comet Presents, where we interview amazing storytellers and artists. This is episode 340. I'm your host, Barney Smith of StoryComic.com, and we're honored to have with us the internationally celebrated and award-winning writer, producer, and president of ZBS Foundation, Tom Lopez.
Hello.
I discovered ZBS through cassettes that I had that I found in some Peace Corps hostels, and got completely enthralled by some of the stories that you guys put together. And it's been a goal to learn more about ZBS, and it's been a goal to have other people learn more about ZBS. So it's an honor to have you come on the show. Before we kind of dive into what ZBS is, do you want to give people a little bit of a background of the history of ZBS?
The history is trying to filter it down because it is, you know, it's like starting any business. I mean, right. In 1970, a lot of us came from different radio stations. So we wanted to put together a radio group, but one that we decided back then, it'd be nice to live in the country, get out of the cities, you know, that kind of thing. And the late 60s into the 70s, there was communes starting. And we decided we would get together as a group to do a business. So officially, we were sort of both. That is, we were a commune, but our intention was a collective. That is, we were there to do a business. And so we started ZBS, I think it was called ZBS Media or something. And that lasted for about 2 years. And we realized we could not make a living doing radio. And that's what we were doing. So we started a not-for-profit. And that way, back then, was a possibility. This predates NPR, by the way. Back then, it was a possibility of getting grants if you were a not-for-profit. They were, that is the National Endowment for the Arts, there was the New York State Council on the Arts, and Corporation for Public Broadcasting were all helping getting radio productions going. They were, you know, they were very open to possibilities. So we started doing some small things and getting grants, and that sort of kept us going. And I was writing, when I was working at a radio station in Montreal, I started writing a series called The Fourth Tower of Inverness. And in 1972, we were able to meet someone who was connected to a rock band called Jefferson Airplane, and he was hitting all these college stations, and he came up and he spent a little time with us, and he said, "What have you been doing?" We took him next door to the studio. We played him a few episodes, and he really liked it, and he said, "Maybe I can do something with you." And so he went back and he talked to a couple of the Grateful Dead, or the couple of the Jefferson Airplane people, Gray Slick, so on. And they liked the idea, and they were able to get funding. And we launched in the fall, and officially, it's all documented, I think it was 375 stations it launched on across the country. Now these were, some were college stations, some were now became NPR stations, you know, affiliated with NPR. And that sort of got us going in a fairly big way, because the Fourth Tower had a lot of spiritual little aspects, besides it was funny. And that sort of, in terms of what I'm doing now, that launched us. So somehow or another kept going after that.
Right. basically what it is ZBS, you create these the audio entertainment, really. It's almost a throwback to the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, where there was putting together these audio dramas, science fiction and fantasy, film noir. It was these audio plays in a way as well, correct? Is that, that's what you produced?
Yeah, we called it radio drama, and at the time, radio drama, I think it existed into the 60s, actually. But it was stronger in the 30s, 40s, 50s even. But it had pretty much disappeared. And so we thought we'd sort of, why not revive it, but why not do an updated version of it? And there was one called I Love a Mystery, which had three characters. And I remembered it as a kid, and it had Jack, Doc, and Reggie, and they would hear it, and it was a series. I mean, it was probably daily and that kind of thing, and they'd hear an organ playing, down in the cellar somewhere in this old mansion, and I decided, let's have a mansion, but I could only afford one actor, which would be a Jack, okay, and we called him Jack Flanders, but instead of an organ, which was sort of like old hat, we had a jukebox up in one of the towers, and it had four towers, and one tower would appear only at times, and hardly anyone ever saw it but Jack, and so that sort of brought in a kind of mystical aspect of it because of some of the things that would play on the jukebox. And so it was inspired by old time radio, but taking it to what was then the present day, or the 70s really. Yeah.
Right. I remember listening, I was listening to Jack Flanders and then Ruby the Gumshoe, the Intergalactic Gumshoe. Mm-hmm. Those are the two series that I listened to. And what I loved about it is that the production value is so well done. It's very much, as we say, based off of like the golden age of radio as well. Is talk to us a little bit about how you did the production. So obviously you used radio stations, you used recording studios to put this together with the sound effects and everything as well.
Yeah, we had at the time we began with anyway, and then we expanded it. But it was a 4-track Ampex record, and then several other. These are all studio equipment. And for something like the Fourth Tower, sometimes we would have like three or four of these 2-track machines rolling along with the 4-track. So it was a matter of getting them all going at the same time. And the person who, the engineer at the time, for the first two Jack Flanders, the Fourth Tower and then Moon Over Morocco. And that was Bobby Bilecki. And Bobby was an engineer I worked with when I worked at a radio station in Philadelphia. And Bobby built our studio. And to this day, he keeps it going. But Bobby lives elsewhere. But within a few hours, in case I have a problem or I talk to him on the phone. And Bobby went on to really be, he invents audio things, audio equipment. And for a lot of artists in the New York City area, and if you know the artist Laurie Anderson, well, Laurie came up here. We were doing an artist in residency thing where various artists could come up here for a week, and like Allen Ginsberg was up here, and some known people. Anyway, Laurie really liked working with Bobby, and she went off and took Bobby with her, and so I learned how to engineer simply because Bobby was gone at that point. But Bobby, I learned from watching Bobby. He was a great engineer, and he was not interested in essentially interested in anything he'd done before. He loved when you challenged him. He loved the idea. You know, let's try this, let's try that. That's where he is. And that's why he went on to work with all these different artists in the New York City area, because they'd come up to him with his problems and he'd figure it out. And to this day, he still does that, but a lot less, he tells me, so.
And because basically where ZBS is that, you know, according to the, I guess the origin story is that you had folks from Montreal and you had folks from New York City. So you're kind of trying to find a middle spot where people could meet. Is that where the physical location was created?
Yeah, that's actually what happened. I mean, some were from New Orleans, by the way, where we thought we would be able to set up the first time was the New Orleans area. But that fell through. When I say that fell through, meaning the backing fell through. And then we met somebody that had an inheritance, and he wanted to do something with, you know, with some of his stocks instead of just enjoying himself. And so for the first 2 years, he supported us, and he was an amazing guy, and his name was Bob Duran, and he's passed on now, but he never once stepped in and said, I think you should do this or do that or make some money, you know, instead of spending it. And anyway, I don't know, what was the question? Oh, was it ZBS, by the way, what it really means is zero bullshit. Yep. And one of the reasons was we had a fundraiser. We had a financial manager, Larry, and Larry when we thought we located between Montreal and New York City, so we're upstate, sort of midway, and Larry, to do business, we soon found out we really couldn't do business with Montreal. So it was all down in New York, but we were quite a ways away. But to get past secretaries trying to reach someone down in New York, he'd say he's from CBS, and they would put him right through. And Larry would give his pitch, and then the guy would stop him at some point and say, you're with CBS? He said, no, ZBS. And so Larry got, so anyway, we thought that was quite nice. And we used that ourselves later after Larry had left. And so it came in handy. But we finally did hear from CBS Foundation wondering, why did we have this name called ZBS Foundation, which is what the official name is. And we said, no, there's no connection, whatever. Just, you know, yeah. It means like Zen Buddhism or something. We would make up something. Yeah. But it was essentially, we started off with about 16 or 18 people, who knows, living in barns and a couple of houses here. And then it after the first year, it settled out to 12. And we lasted for, what was it, about 11 years, I guess it was. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, the commune lasted for that long. And then other people went their way, and I was able to keep it going. So,
what do you see the ones, like, if somebody's looking to say, you know, Tom, I just discovered ZBS, what's a good introductory story or audio story that you would recommend people to kind of, that which is like a good introduction to ZBS libraries? Well,
probably when it comes to the two main characters are Ruby and Jack Flanders, and that is, you know, there's quite a few stories for each, and that is in series done over the years, and probably for Jack Flanders would be Moon Over Morocco. In Moon Over Morocco, I had gone to Morocco before, and so I decided to go there and record. So I traveled around Morocco and just gathering sounds and then taking notes, and then sort of wrote the story to the sounds that I had, because there were a lot of wonderful sounds, as one can guess, in Morocco. Besides, there's an American expatriate writer by the name of Paul Bowles, who I knew, and Paul gave me a lot of music that he had recorded, Moroccan music, over the years. And so I was able to weave that into the story. It's a 10-hour story. I mean, it came out on radio as 15 minutes a day, and or 1 hour, 1 hour a week. So it ran for, 10 weeks. And it's very rich in sound. If people really like sound, as well as the actors too, that's a good start but it's 10 hours. But 10 hours, I mean, what the heck? With Ruby, that came out as 3 minutes a day, and just very short episodes, because that was the early 80s, and radio was still open at that possibility of little daily episodes, and that was it was very kind of funny, cartoonish almost. And to this day, I'm still doing it. I'm mixing one right now, in fact. a Ruby, it's called Ruby 12, but the truth is there was Ruby like 7.5. There's Ruby, I don't know how many Ruby episodes, maybe 18 or something, different stories, who knows. So yeah, it still exists for some reason.
For those, do you still have radio stations that actually play ZBS material?
Well, now hardly any stations. I mean, a few college stations, but no. The radio's moved on to other things, whatever that is. And but the it's on the internet, and a few places, as well as our website, that kind of thing. So it's still out there, but certainly very few stations, hardly any.
And so how do you do that now? Because you say you're still mixing and you're still producing some stories now. How does the technology different from 1970, now fast forward 54 years later?
Well, it's all computer now. I mean, what we used to have, mixing board, all these 16-track machines, blah, blah. No, it's just very small with a little room where a couple of actors can, where before we had a full room where you could have 8 or 10 actors all at once, sort of scattered around the room, all with their own mics, at the same time. So now it's just a lot of it is done. I still work with some of the same actors, only a lot of it they record, like they tend to be New York actors mainly, and New York area actors. So I do go down there upon occasion and record in a studio, but even then there's a lot I can't get, because a lot of them are like working all the time, doing the theater. And so they record at home often. They have a little. They are able to record, and they send me their lines. And the interesting thing is, you can write dialogue for several different actors without there being there at all. And because they're all pros, as I call them, professional actors, when you put the lines together, it really sounds like they're talking to each other. It always amazes me. I say, oh my God, really they're responding, so on and so forth. Meaning the actors know how to read the line that they're responding to somebody that spoke, and they can just read it in their mind, and then they speak it out loud. And, and it took me a long time to realize that actors are artists. They're as much artists as painters and sculptors and so on, and actors will take, and what I give them, which is a line, and they shape it and form it, and they make it become alive. It's but not only alive, but responding to other people that aren't there. Right. It's rather fun. Right. They used to be all in the studio together. Now they're all over the place.
when you have, so for those to know, like Jack Flanders is he like an investigator? He's an adventurer. It's multidimensional. Sort of yeah.
He's sort of all those things. He's, I don't know how he came about, just someone who was interested in life. I mean, basically the story of the Fourth Tower of Inverness is someone who arrives at, because he's related to his aunt, is at this mansion called Inverness, and things start to happen to him all the time. What he doesn't know is that it's all planned. That is, that these things happen to wake him up, to make him aware that he's alive, you know, to so that he starts to see things. And so that's how his, all his experiences are really there with everybody helping him, all these strange crackpot people that live in this mansion. And finally he sort of, it's, you know, an awareness, a consciousness raising, you know, right. Waking, being awake, you know, and it's, so that's sort of how that character started becoming. And then he went on to help other people. That is, with their having problems and trying to figure it out for them, that kind of thing.
Well, it's amazing, Tom, and I love it. ZBS was way before its, it was before its time, because you filled in the gap of the audio dramas, as you mentioned, that existed in the radio productions that existed in, as we say, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and then a little bit in the 60s as well. And then it seems as though there was a stall as radio started to do more top 40 and seemed to be have and start to concentrate on more niche radio. ZBS came in, as you mentioned, before NPR became out. And because you're before your time, and now with the advent of podcasting dramas and all these things, you're now, ZBS now has become timeless instead of before your time as well. Do you, as the president of ZBS, where do you see the direction of audio production and audio stories in the future now?
I have no idea. I honestly have not the slightest idea. I don't know what's going on out there in the world. I sort of live in the country here, and I like it, you know. And but I mean, I wish I did. I really didn't expect to still be here, frankly, and so I didn't have to think that far ahead. And now I'm just sort of like somebody who watches and wonders, and but it's nice to see that it still exists in its own in podcast form, and that there are young people doing it. The sad part of it, I mean, now in terms of productions that other people, radio, you know, not radio drama, but drama productions, audio productions, they generally don't have any funding, and so they use friends and so on, and so a lot of it, the acting is, you know, and it's nice to work with actors that are real actors. But and also too, the, you know, I started in a time when you could get support. I mean, if you knew how to play the game, because it really was a matter of playing a game. I mean, an example would be like people would do a production and, you know, charge stations for it. Well, the stations had so little money. So when we first started, we were able to give it to stations, and then I kept doing that. I always gave it free to radio stations. So when I went in for a grant, other people that were pay or had to ask stations for money, you know, they would show 35 or 55 stations, you know, show a list of their stations, and I'd show 350 stations. So who would get the grant? You know, and, you know, and there were people that said, well, you're not charging anything. I said, the stations don't have money. And they didn't. I mean, they had very little money. Right. And they were grateful to get something for free. And And I was grateful that they wanted to play it. So
Right.
yeah. Anyway, so there was a little game that you played back then when there
Yeah.
was money.
How often is the ZBS library updated with new materials?
Well, with the COVID, it all came to a stop. I mean, for 3 years, because I couldn't get actors into studios, and so I frankly thought that was it. But I had a Ruby script, and it's for Ruby 11, I guess it was, and I just kept rewriting it. In over 3 years, and it's like an hour script, and I sort of learned how to write. When I say learn how to write, I learned to get it down to the bare minimum, and to say it in the fewest possible words. To say, what do I want to say here? Well, you say it, and the beauty of it is, again, when you're working with good actors, they can give all sorts of meanings to words. I mean, take a phrase like "come here." Can you imagine how many different ways you can say that? It can be alluring, "come here." So, a woman say, it can be demanding, "come here." Blah blah blah. I mean, there are endless ways to say words, and words, you realize, they have their own sort of life and meaning, and you can take them and shape them in different ways, and keep it down to a minimum. So when Ruby 11 came out, it really, really was fun to do, and so I decided to keep writing in that style. And now I'm 12. Ruby 12 will be coming out in April, and I've already written a Ruby 14. I jumped over 13 because friends had said, "Don't call it 13," and I'm not into that kind of thing, but I don't want to challenge it either. So I've also written another script that I'll probably record in May, maybe.
So have you ever had then with because of Jack and Ruby being your two main characters, but there are two separate stories. Have they ever teamed up at all? Have you ever written a story with those two together?
No, because not in terms of the actors, yes, but not in terms of the
Characters.
because Jack is a present and Ruby supposedly is in the future.
Is in the
So,
future. She's like an intergalactic gumshoe,
right,
right?
exactly, yeah.
Have you ever had any other team, like any other, meetings of other characters happen?
Oh God, so many. I mean, if you checked Wikipedia, ZBS or ZBS Foundation Wikipedia, somebody has put together, accurately, by the way, all the stories, when they came out, who's in them, so on and so forth. And I don't know, there are, I mean, we've got something like 300 hours, a lot of different stories, and things recorded in different ways too. Like I had
Right.
a recording that three-dimensional sound, and that kind of thing. It's something that was developed of Mike, that's a head with ears and so on, and Neumann, who makes these high-end microphones, a German company.
Right.
So anyway, there are, that was back in the days of when we started. People said, "Oh, do it in mono." I said, "Mono? No, you got stereo." Honestly, in back in 1970, people were, mono was what radio had, except when, it was when smaller stations started, they had stereo, and you said, "Oh my gosh, look, stereo."
And so if people want to kind of like learn more about ZBS or and support ZBS, because as you mentioned, it is a nonprofit, would it
Yeah.
be easier for them to purchase some of the downloads or CDs, or would it be better to, what's the best way that people could support ZBS?
Well, one way is, we have two websites. There's ZBS, well, it's just ZBS.org, is org being, you know. But then we have one called zbsmedia.com. And now ZBS Media is a subscription where you can subscribe for $5 a month, and you have access to everything. You could, where you can stream it is what it is. What it is, it's a streaming website. The others are for if you want to own something, and these things are multi-layered. A lot of them, that is, in the sense that they're made for more than one listening. And that's how we were able to sell it, because you couldn't get everything in one listening. Like radio is made, especially back then, was made for one listening. No.
Right.
Ours were made, if you want to get everything, you got to hear it a couple of times, you know, because there's always things you're going to miss. So.
Right.
Anyway, but that's the other ZBS Media website. So I don't know how many hours and hours are there, but there's a lot.
Oh, there's a lot. I mean, if you just look at, you know, Jack Flanders alone, like if somebody wanted to buy the absolutely complete Jack Flanders MP3, huge. Like you're talking 81 hours. 81 hours.
Yeah. That's all.
That's two. That's over two working weeks of.
well, when you do it for 50 years, you can. It's extraordinary. I mean, it's just so bizarre.
Have you had to do something within like the canon of talking about it, about how if there is any like new actors that have started in and the voices were different?
No, actually, they're all the same. Robert Lorick was his name. And Robert Lorick was an interesting actor in New York, because Robert Lorick, he was also the voice of Chanel, you know, Chanel. Oh, really? And he did Chanel commercials, but he sounds so much more sophisticated. But so Robert loved doing Jack because it was very different. And, but when Robert died, it's probably been about 4 or 5 years now. I just decided that. I mean, Jack had become Jack and Robert sort of were together. I mean, right. And for somebody else to do it, I just felt no. You know, that's time. Right. With Ruby, it's the same person.
Really?
Laura, who does, yeah, it's the same person. She started, you know, with the first Ruby was in the late 70s, but the series itself started in 81. I mean, Ruby 1, 2, 3, etc. And so even to this day, and now she lives outside New York, like Cape Cod. And but when she comes back into New York, which happens to be in April and May, that's when I record her, right? Instead of, because she just has too many lines to send her, you know, a recorder. And also to actors like, you know, like to work with each other when they can. So other people that live in the New York area, you know, will come into the studio. It's fun to record like the old days, you know, with actors all together. Yeah.
You're doing it all digitally. You already have the sound effects already.
Yeah.
And then you just pull them up as MP3s.
Yeah, I've got, you know, over the years you collect, but also you do a lot. I mean, because back in the early days, there was hardly any sound effects records. Now, of course, you can get all kinds of wonderful things. So,
right.
So it's easy for me to write. So when I'm writing and a sound effect comes to mind, you know, I say, oh yeah, I've got that in my mind. Right. You know, I can use that. And because the sound effects are an important part. Oh, and I should say something too, that Tim Clark, the composer I work with, and he did the music for the first Ruby and all the others. And and I still work with him to this day. I mean, he lives down in North Carolina, but right now, I mean, he's just finishing doing the last episode of Ruby Ruby 12 now, so he's that's why I'm waiting for before I start mixing these things. I'm waiting for the music to, and he really enjoys doing it, and so it's very much a sort of group effort in the sense that when I write, I learned how to work with Tim over the years, in the sense that people often write audio dramas, but everyone's talking. So whatever music you have kind of is back there, because otherwise if it comes up, it'll step on the voices and you won't be able to hear them. But with Tim, he can put a filter on so that the music can come up without touching. It's not in the same frequencies as the voice. And also, I write so that the words breathe. That is, they have pauses. They have, instead of everyone talking at once, and the music then can come up and sort of accent what the people are saying. And often it does. It'll often accent a word, but very subtly. It'll be part of Tim's composition, because Tim listens to the music, and that's what listens to the voices, or I send him a rough mix, and then he does the music listening to the voices. So,
wow.
Yeah. So it's very much I'm thinking about his music, even though I don't know what it'll be, but just so that it'll be sort of like another character.
Right. Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. So Tom, as they say, ZBS has been around for 54 years.
Yeah.
So what does the next 54 years bring for ZBS?
I have no idea. I mean, it's just year to year. It's more like, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be around. So I'm not making any plans.
No. Right. Yeah. Well, perfect. Well, Tom, it's been an honor to talk with you, and I'm really excited to get more people to learn more about ZBS, and I'm really excited now to learn about the ZBS media, and I'm definitely going to be a subscriber. That $5 a month for hundreds and hundreds, you probably about 1,000. It's going to be about 1,000 hours, as we say.
I know.
Jack Flanders is 81. Yeah, you probably. It's probably like hundreds and hundreds of hours of media.
Probably is. Yeah. I've once figured it out, but that was several years ago.
Yeah. And now there's more too. So, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Tom, for your time.
Well, it's been fun.
It has been I'll edit this part out. This is the best thing about recording in front of it, and right. I can edit it later. It's been a goal to learn more about ZBS, and it's been a goal to